Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Curious Conversations with Tully and Sarah. We sit down and chat with business owners, entrepreneurs, and some of the best conversation starters. This is a podcast about real life lessons and people doing cool shit. What is up, my curious friends?
What is up? Welcome to another episode of Curious Conversations. Happy Wednesday.
Happy whatever day you're listening.
Yes. Exactly what Sarah said. But we have another curious conversation today.
Oh, obviously.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying because last week was super curious. I mean, a lot of our conversations are curious, but we had Steve on.
Yeah, and random. I met Steve at Bar Bambi last year.
How funny. So we had Steve on and he really opened up and it was a really vulnerable conversation. And yep. I loved, at the end, I was like, I loved hearing that story. It's obviously, you know, there was a lot of pain and all that kind of stuff involved, but it was kind of inspiring as well. So I loved that.
I think for both of us, we've heard about friends doing psychedelics for quite a while now. I've never gone into that world. I wanted to go to Costa Rica in 2020.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do it, but it's still something that I'm super curious about. And it's funny how it's in traditional medicine of Native Americans, and also I think Aboriginals also have some kind of plant medicine as well. But it's interesting to see how there's a real shift in Western society to go deeper into yourself and how deep can you get.
Yeah, it's so interesting. A lot of you are probably listening and you may not have ever heard the word psychedelics before. Mm-hmm.
There's a stigma around
it. Yeah, I mean, in our group of friends, selected group, I've heard it a lot. We've done yoga training. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of spiritual friends. I've heard it a lot, but I never knew much about it.
But then we've got another group of friends that would be like, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, if you're listening, you're like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. I think this episode, not only is it inspiring, I love hearing people's stories. So I love listening to episodes like this on any podcast. So I think listen and you'll learn more about what it is. And it's not some hippie, I mean, there's probably hippies that do it, but mm-hmm. like it's not this hippie trip, like where you trip out and it's not what I thought it was.
No, and Steve had a really interesting story and he speaks about one of his experiences where he was with CEOs and COOs of big businesses, and that's a common thing in this world.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So we hope you guys love the episode. He also has a podcast too called Squeezing Plums.
Squeezing the Plums.
Squeezing the Plums.
It's a really great podcast, especially for guys. It's guys opening up and I've been listening to it and he's doing an amazing job with it.
Love that. So don't forget to listen to Steve's podcast. And if you love this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe and share with all your friends.
Bye. How many more weeks now, Tal?
When this comes out, I think I'll have 7 or 6.
Ooh.
Fuck. Fuck.
Bye. Steve, welcome to Curious Conversations.
Thank you.
I've been looking forward to this chat for a long time.
Mm.
Psychedelics.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's something that I would never have ever have thought out of everything that I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'd be talking about psychedelics with you girls. And it's an interesting topic. It's got a lot of press. It's been talked about for a long time. I'm interested to dive in.
I feel like at the moment we've got a lot of friends in LA and America. I feel like it's a very much a big thing over there. And we've got selected friends here that are like into it and then other friends that are like fucking, they have no idea what it is, to be honest. So I'm excited to hear more about it. Let's go back before the psychedelics. Can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing and just let us get to know you a little bit better?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the journey sort of starts, I'll take it to when I was 16 years of age. So I'd grown up with a pretty traditional, I would say, Indian upbringing. Mm-hmm. My parents were, you know, my dad was a cab driver, mum stayed at home. played sport, studied a lot, all that sort of traditional sort of thing mm-hmm. where it's like, have your values, you have to make sure you do everything right. I was the eldest child, so there was definitely no fucking up. No,
it was like pressure.
It was like, it's like, you do it, yeah?
Yeah, that is a lot of pressure though. Like, how did you handle that? Did you know it was pressure?
At the time, I didn't know it was pressure. I just thought that was my responsibility.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because on my mum and my dad's side, I was the eldest on every extended relative there was. So they're always like, everyone's looking up to you. You've got to make sure you do everything right.
Yeah.
So, and I think there'll be a lot of people that listen that sort of resonate or know someone that's had that weight of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got to a stage where I went overseas. Like I said, my dad didn't bring in too much, but everything he brought in, he'd push towards us, right? Yeah. And I just got a scholarship to a new school for sports. And it wasn't a full scholarship, but it was pretty close to. But the camp that I wanted to go to overseas costed like $6,000-$7,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, fuck, I'd love to go. Hey, it'd be so nice to go. But at that age, you're very cognizant of what your parents bring in, what rent is, how much this costs, that costs. So you start to navigate the questions that you ask and you always try to ask it at the right time. You go, I've got to make sure that he's not angry. I've got to make sure I ask him.
Oh my God, yes.
You know, it's like you come home to your partner or to someone that you care about and you're like, righto, how am I going to navigate
this
situation
today? It's not the right night. Yeah, so true.
We're going to hold.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, hey, like there's a camp. It's for cricket. It's like 20 days. All the boys are going, I'd love to go.
Yeah.
I'd love to go. And he's like, let me think about it.
Uh-huh.
And everything is like, always let me think about it. I'm like, all right. I run it by your mother. I'm like, okay. And eventually after 4 or 5 weeks of him working, massive shifts, like cab drivers back in the day, it's not like Uber drivers now. Like you got people that did runners. You had people that were like really abusive.
Oh,
you know, now like a lot of people that maybe never took a cab back in the late 90s or early 2000s, like now people hop into an Uber and they will give them 5 stars or like it smells nice or, you know, there was a lot of whereas back then you would have so much disparity with the driver that you get, with the accent that they'd have, with the level of care that was given both ways.
Yep.
So then all of a sudden, like, it was much harder to, I would say, earn an income back then.
Yeah.
And so you kind of know about all those things growing up, and then he's eventually been able to gather the money, send me overseas.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is awesome. But he's like, Steve, you have one rule, one responsibility, don't fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I've ever heard my entire life. Like, don't stuff up, lead by example. And don't get me wrong, amazing parents, always did whatever they could for me. But in my mind, in my head, that was what was repeating. And so I go overseas and I'll cut the story short to a time where I had a pint with a group of boys that were the cool guys in school.
Yeah.
I was
this
not.
Is at camp. Was,
this is
at camp.
This is in England. I'm in England.
Yeah.
You know, I'm playing cricket. I'm 16. I'm like, oh. And then part of me's like, don't fuck up. And part of me's like, it's only a pint. Like, really? Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know? And in our culture, that's not like you don't do that. Like maybe another culture is like, yeah, be cheeky, have a few drinks, whatever. In our culture, it's like, no.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, or in my family at least, right? I'm not saying Indians don't drink. There's a lot of Indians that drink a lot, right? But at that age, it wasn't about that. It was about leading by example, responsible, all this sort of stuff. You're on a scholarship, don't fuck up, you know, yada, yada. And I remember having my first pint of beer and I was walking back to the dorm. And then out of nowhere, it was like I got hit by a baseball bat across the top of my head, across the back of my head. And I couldn't look up. I was in the world's most ridiculous pain. Mm-hmm. Like I can't describe how painful it was. Like a thunderclap like smacked me in the back of the head. And for that entire night, you know, it was like 3 or 4 hours, I didn't say anything. I was doing my best not to yell at the top of my lungs. And at that time, I didn't know what I was experiencing was called a cluster headache.
Mm-hmm.
And so for anyone that's listening that's had a friend or a family member go through cluster headache, they would know that the severity of pain is probably up there with the most severe pain you can experience.
No way.
So
you recently put up a scale and it had, I think, labor as in the eights and a cluster headache at 9.7 or something.
Yeah. So they did a study on people that have experienced cluster headaches and experienced other traumatic events in their life or events that would create pain.
So, for instance, labour.
Like labour pain.
Yeah.
You're like, go on, Steve.
Tell me how much pain I'm about to be in.
So the women that experience labour pain categorized it a 7.2 out of 10.
Oh my God.
The women that also experienced labor pain and cluster headaches deemed a cluster headache a 9.7 out of 10.
Holy moly.
So, and the way that cluster headaches work is they happen in clusters. So you might have an episode and then generally in my case, I would have a series of episodes that would last anywhere from 1 to 4 hours. And that would happen 1 to 2 times a day for 30 to 60 days.
Jesus.
What does it feel like? Just pressure in your head that you can't open your eyes? Like, what does that pain feel like?
I think the easiest way to describe it, so people have had migraines before,
yeah,
right? Or headaches before. Yeah. And so they would deem that on the scale at about a 3 to 4 out of 10 in terms of pain.
Okay.
Okay. And so you would, a migraine, you get irritated and pissed off if you're moving around. You need a dark room
mm-hmm.
and you need to lay still and it will last for a minimum of 4 hours. A cluster headache, you have restlessness. So if you sit still, you go, it almost heightens the pain.
Wow.
So you're trying to move, but when you're in that much pain, you're out of energy. Mm-hmm. So it's like this massive contradiction for your body to handle. And so I guess the main thing that is like to describe the experience or what it feels like is it is like there is on one quarter of your face. So we call it an orbital pain. So it's behind the eye
mm-hmm.
generally. You would experience like a volcano rush of blood that would be trying to push the eye out.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That would be the easiest way because the blood flow increases so dramatically behind there. You'll see people's eyes go red, almost looking like they want to pop. They're super closed in nature. And yeah, it's an awful pain. So the nickname they've given to it with another condition called trigeminal neuralgia is called suicide headaches because the contemplation, and I haven't gone through it, I'm very grateful I haven't, but the contemplation of suicides is 10 times higher with this condition than any other condition.
Oh my gosh. So before you got hit, in the head.
The feeling of
the feeling bit of hitting the head. Had you had that feeling before?
So my first experience was that of 16.
That one time. Okay.
Yeah. And that has context around the psychedelics. But that first experience, I was rebelling. I was overseas. And for, like I said, for people that are listening, they go, that wasn't very rebellious. But once again, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on your upbringing and how it leads to that moment, right? For the ones that have known me since I've finished high school, like I've worked in nightclubs and bars mm-hmm. and I still drink, it's not a problem, but it's the attachment to what has happened and it's the shame and the guilt around that. I think that sort of sparked that initial.
Yeah. I was going to say that it sounds like, and obviously you've seen therapists and stuff and you've gone through the psychedelics, so you kind of know where it was triggered from, but listening to that, I'm like, oh, whoa, it sounds like it was guilt, like you felt guilty. So that's interesting. So when that happened, how, like Sarah said, what do you do? If you can't sit still, you kind of can move around. What do you do to treat the pain? Do you take Panadol? Like what do you do?
I don't think Panadol is going to help
anything. No, but I'm just
pain.
Curious. Like what do you, how do you mask that pain?
I love how you put curious in there. That was
yeah, that was strategic.
Of times.
Yeah.
Great work. So initially when that happens, you don't know what you've got.
Okay.
Right? So you're like, have I just got a migraine and I'm being a little bitch?
Uh-huh.
That's what went through my head because it's always like…
Because you didn't know it was cluster headache.
I didn't know it was a cluster headache.
Yeah.
And even if I did know it was a cluster headache later on down the track, no one explained to me the severity of what it was.
Okay.
And me even thinking about it, I didn't want to think about it because it would give me the anxiety that shit might come on at any second.
Mm-hmm. Tully would have thought she was had a brain tumor.
Yeah, I would have been like, I'm dying. No, I would have. Yeah. Like that's what would have been going through my head. I would have been petrified.
Well, I was, but I kind of, and this is the reason why I started a podcast around it is because most guys don't know how to talk about half their issues.
Uh-huh.
And so they'll suppress it not to get anyone else worried.
Yeah.
That's
true.
So for me, when I was going through it, it was literally like the initial phase happened. And then over the course from 18 years of age through to 30 years of age, I would have periods of time where I would undergo these clusters, but then I would also have long periods of time where I'd have nothing.
Interesting.
So then I'm like, oh, okay, what can I try when these come on? So I used to have coffee and coffee helped it.
Okay.
Right? And what I didn't know at the time was coffee is a vasoconstrictor, so it constricts the blood vessels.
Yeah.
So when I used to have coffee, it would constrict the blood vessels so the blood flow wouldn't
be as intense
into my eye. So then I'm like, sweet. So I got to the stage of having like, 5 coffees a day because I'm like, I need one for prevention.
Yeah.
I need one because fucking working and I'm like, I need to keep awake.
Yeah.
And then I need one before the gym and then I need to make sure because this can come on before bed, you know, and my friends are Italians and Greeks and, you know, have the espresso before you go to sleep. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's all good. But the byproduct of that was I was getting alopecia, like I was, you know, stress was holding onto my body differently. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm not experiencing this headache again. Mm-hmm. I tried things like watching porn. And like that helped for a period of time. Like this is fucking weird.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not going to argue.
I'm like, all right,
happy days. Yeah. Like Pornhub, thanks very much.
I was going to say, how does porn help?
I suppose it stimulates. Like, but no, not stimulates.
No, it'd be a constrictor of some sort. If you're getting blood down there, you may be not getting blood up there.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
That's what they say with females. Like,
yeah,
well, they say with females, if you've got a headache, go like have an orgasm.
Do they?
Yeah. I think it's the reverse for women, like blood flow.
Well, it makes sense.
Stimulate your brain, but yeah, interesting.
I had this little thing called like a migraine stick and it would release a smell.
I've seen those, yeah.
Little migraine stick. That helped for a little bit. It cooled down the area. I used to put ice packs on my neck, on my head to try to like freeze anything that would cool down the area. I tried aspirin and I used to have like four or five aspirin and smack that down. And then it got to the stage where I was having aspirin, coffee. Like I had a liter of Mother, the energy drink.
Jesus.
To try to suppress it. And I felt no energy change whatsoever in my body. It got to that level where I was like anything and everything I could do. I had tried, obviously I'd seen the doctors at some point.
Yeah.
And I had tried preventative medication. I had tried Botox in the head and the neck to try to reduce the tension. And none of that had worked. And so it got to a stage where I was 30 years of age and I'd lived with a couple of mates. And, you know, these class addicts, like I said, they came in waves. Mm-hmm. So I could be going out on a date. And I know we've had your dating stuff come up on stories recently. So
we can talk about dating. Hinge still needs to sponsor the podcast.
And but I remember having – I remember the onset of the cluster headache coming on in a date. I was at Mr. Miyagi's when it was a cool, trendy thing to do, right? And I'm thinking, oh, not now. There was a girl down from Adelaide. She was really pretty. I'm like, all right, we're going to Mr. Miyagi's. I'll take you out for dinner. And I remember it coming on. No. And I said, right, I need two espresso martinis. And I ran to the toilet and I just started to like try to breathe. I didn't watch porn. I was trying to breathe. Yeah. I was trying to like G myself up because – one of the things that helped is if I could G myself up, get the energy flowing. It's like I use the example of listening to like a motivational track, right? And that you get goosebumps.
Yeah.
When you get goosebumps,
you fire yourself, you fire the adrenaline.
Up, right?
Yeah.
And so with these headaches, if you are at a 2 or 3 out of 10 and you know it has the potential to go to a 10 out of 10, you start to panic.
Yeah.
And you go, right, calm yourself down. And then you're like, okay, calming doesn't work. I need to do the opposite end of the scale. I need to G myself up. And that's such a big difference to other headaches and migraines and things like that. And this is why it's such an interesting condition because your energy is about to be zapped from your body when you're in that much pain.
Uh-huh.
But you need to produce energy in order to try to alleviate the stress. And so, you know, I was 30 years of age and I ended up living with a neurologist. She was a French neurologist that had moved down to Australia to finish her degrees, let's say, or her placement.
That's the universe looking out for you.
It is the universe. Yes. Well, I was like, fuck, where were the universe when I was 16? But
anyways, but legit,
you know, and having that mindset, I was like, okay. And I was about to experience attack and she was like, what's up? And I'm like, I can't talk. I need to go to the bedroom.
You didn't know it was cluster headaches at this
stage? Well, at this stage, it was either cluster headache, migraine, this, that. I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
Like I'm not entirely sure. And I've tried medication for prevention for cluster headache.
Mm.
I've tried medication for prevention for migraine. I've tried medication. So I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
But all I know is it's really painful.
It's coming on, yeah.
And if it's painful, I've tried different things. And then at the end of it, she's had what's happening. So I explained to her my symptoms, what was going on. And she sat down, she opened up this book and it was her neurology textbook.
Mm-hmm.
And have you guys, I use this example on my own podcast, but have you guys seen Batman where it's the policeman that gets turned and he's got like half his face burnt off?
Yeah.
So she has a neurology textbook and she opens it up and there in the picture is a guy ripping off half his face. She's like, is that what you're experiencing? And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly how it feels. Mm. And that was the first time where I had a sense of relief.
Wow.
And then when that happened, she's like, you need to go seek help now.
What's her version of seeking help?
Go to a hospital.
Oh.
It's like, you need to go to – why haven't you been to a hospital? And I'm like
– why hadn't you been to a hospital?
I thought it was a bit dramatic.
Okay.
Once again, because I don't want to be – and this comes down to just the way that you brought up, but I didn't want to be dramatic.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, I'm getting a migraine at night. I know I'll ride it out. Yep. It's only a few hours. Toughen up. Deal with it. But, like, the pain's so bad that you're like – it was just – it was a real fucked up cycle where you're like, I don't know why I haven't done it. And it smacks me in the face now. I'm like, dude, why didn't you do that earlier? Mm. Like, you're an idiot. But then at the same time, I'm not trying to blame myself for my actions. It's just that's the way that I navigated through that circumstance. So – next time it happened, I had another doctor friend pick me up, take me to hospital.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, I started to get certain treatments. I had an oxygen tank in my room anytime that I would have a cluster bout. So I used to have that in my room. Wasn't the sexiest thing to have around in your in your bedroom. But anyway, so I had an oxygen tank. I had all these injections, like adrenaline-style injections, but they are called sumatriptan, that I would inject into myself the moment a headache would come on.
Oh, wow.
But they're so expensive and so hard to get that you would hold on to them like – worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And I tried other things like a local anesthetic in my head and all this type of stuff, but that didn't work.
Uh-huh.
But I finally, after 14 years, had some reprieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had a way to opt out.
Mm-hmm.
But it never got to the – at that stage of my life, never understood why I got the headaches,
mm-hmm.
why me. And then also I kind of wanted to look at ways that I could maybe deal with the internal struggle of it. So that I would prevent it from
Mm.
And that's where psychedelics come in.
Okay. Can I just ask a question? I don't know if you're going to bring this into the psychedelic stuff, but at that time, could you see a connection between every time you were having the headache and what was happening with your life?
Stressful. Like,
was it stress related? Was it anxious? Because I know for me, like, this is totally not related, but it kind of is. Like, I get super bloated when I'm super anxious, and I can feel myself, like, my stomach will go boom. And I'm like, okay, am I anxious? Am I stressed? I'm like, oh yeah, I am. That's why I'm reacting like this. Could you see anything in your life?
So
it's like a connection?
Is there a repetition of guilt or not feeling good enough when the cluster headaches came on?
So initially I thought that it was alcohol that was the trigger.
Okay, interesting.
Right? Because my first time was alcohol.
Yep.
And then I would find certain red wines would I'd trigger. And then it was like, I had a sushi and soy sauce, and then I found soy sauce. So I spoke to my dietitian at work.
Oh.
And she's like, there are certain like
MSGs or something.
Sulfites or things like that, that can piss it off. But then I'd be times where I'd be fine, but then the weather would be super hot.
Okay.
And then what I learned is that with headache and migraine and any sort of disorder like that, there are multiple reasons why it can come on. And all it is it going, well, it's like a bucket being filled up with water.
Uh-huh.
It's like if you've had – like, and I'm running a business. If you have business stress, family stress, then you have maybe I'm, you know, trying to play, you know, a high level of cricket, which I was at the time. It's like not making the team. Mm. Why is that?
Mm.
And then you couple in either bad diet or, you know, something that would be a triggering factor and then boom. And then, you know, sometimes change of season. All these things started to play a role. So it was very hard initially, I thought. And then I stopped some stuff and then it would still come on.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, I can't figure this out.
Live like this, yeah.
So who made the connection that psychedelics has the potential to help with cluster headaches?
So when I was going through this, I didn't speak to many friends about it.
Mm-hmm.
Through your whole life?
No.
Right.
No. Well, how do I say it? So I think one thing for me growing up was I didn't have many friends.
Yeah.
And so I always learned to bring the vibe, bring the energy, and I've got the best group of mates now. I'm so fucking lucky. Like, I've got an amazing group of boys and girls that are mates of mine. But I think intrinsically, like, if you're talking about your problems, you're bringing down the vibe.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
And when you've got a good friendship group and you're out and about and you're laughing and you're smiling, you're bringing up the vibe.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, there are times where I would listen to my mates if they were going through that, but I never felt comfortable the other way around, which is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you need to know that every single bloke has a subset of friends. Not every bloke even has friends now. We're in a bit of a loneliness crisis. They always talk about that in other podcasts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then out of that group of mates, is Bob from the cricket club really the bloke you're going to go to to talk about your fucking ex?
Yeah, right.
Probably not, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So then the quality of your friends become really important and then the comfortability around being vulnerable in front of your mates and hoping that they've got the right sort of capacity to listen and provide some level of context or advice. And I guess in that phase, although that I'd got some amazing mates, I never had that, I guess, capacity to go deep on myself to talk to other people.
Yep.
Whether it's fear of weakness or fear of bringing down the vibe.
Judgment too.
Judgment, so, absolutely. Yeah. All of the rest. But I did speak to one mate and I'd been mates with him for years and he had chronic fatigue. And he had, he's like my super smart friend. Like, and I'm like, all right. And he was looking into this.
Oh, wow.
And he had started it and he had done what's called like psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. Now in Melbourne, they're offering that now. I'm pretty sure as of middle of last year, they're offering MDMA and psilocybin assisted psychotherapy.
Oh, wow.
My ex was
I didn't know that.
Looking into that because they do it a lot with soldiers trauma. In PTSD. Mm-hmm. To help them relive the trauma, to overcome the trauma. I don't know the ins and outs, but it's becoming a very common thing now as a treatment method for people with conditions.
Well, Bessel van der Kolk is an author that's written the book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Ah, yeah.
And that book is amazing. It's a lot to read in the first 100 pages because it's very in-depth into the physiology of the body and how that gets affected with post-traumatic stress disorder. But, what he was saying was have a look at the research on cluster headaches and migraines done in the US because there's a lot of research that shows I was on the sumatriptans, the injections, that mushrooms was literally almost the exact same organic or chemical, I guess.
Release or?
Yeah, yeah, like the structure
of
the compound was pretty much very similar to the triptans.
Wow.
And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, you should have a look into this. So I'm like, okay, here we go. Here's a rabbit hole. I'm like, and I've, up until this stage, I've never taken a drug and I've identified with not doing that. And so then this also challenged my own identity and my ego.
Yeah, so
and
you're 30-something, never touched anything and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, and I'm like, and I've had mates that have gone to me, come on, bro, like I can loosen up a little bit, and then part of me would be like, well, now I need to tell them that I'm doing this. And I'm like, oh, but anyways, I'm like, this was an interesting self-reflecting moment. I'm like, do I really need to like worry about what other people think in this moment? And is it for the right reasons in my headspace? I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Rationalized it, validated it in my own way. And then I started. And I started, my first thing I did was what was called psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. And that was very, very interesting.
And what kind of plant medicine did you have in that one?
That was mushrooms and MDMA. So that was in that therapy, that was pretty much what's being offered now. But like the pain was so real, like it is so bad that I was like, I'll do anything. So you know, I traveled a fair distance and I put myself in a position where that was available to me.
When you're in that environment and they're treating it, can you talk us through that process? Is someone guiding you? Do they lie you down? Like how much do they give you?
So I did it with more like a shaman style of, I guess, facilitator rather than a doctor. So I couldn't do that here. So I had to go somewhere else. And so when I put myself in that position, they had four people in the room with me. So I'm sitting down. I'm nervous as shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, were you scared?
I'm so nervous. I'm thinking, you know, all the thoughts that were going through my head was, am I going to turn into a hippie? Legit. Am I going to be like, you don't need to work anymore. You can just…
Barefoot, you know, Nimbin. Like,
I was like, chill out. And I'm like, I like sports. I like going out. I like having a drink. Am I going to just… And I was so afraid because I just had no idea of the effect of it. And so I guess it comes down to understanding a couple of things. One is with psychedelics, it's about dose.
Can I just go back? How you were talking about scared. Are you a control freak?
Am I a control freak? I'm probably controlling on myself.
Yeah.
To have, like, I like to control the outcome of whatever I do.
Yeah. So in an instance like this or drugs, you have no control of the outcome.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
There's a fear behind that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, I'm not trying to control everything in life, but whatever, like, my business or my work or my personal space is, like, on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want to have some level of control, but then also the only constant in life is change.
Mm. True.
Right? So there's a massive polarity with that. But yeah, so when I sat in that room, it was a beautiful facilitator. He was a lovely guy. And him and there was three other people in the room that would quote unquote hold space for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would be four people sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on a cushion,
mm-hmm.
legs crossed, and I'm not the most flexible bloke. And I'm looking at these guys and I'm thinking, oh, have I made the right choice? Have I done this right? And I'm like, just fucking do it, bro.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just enough's enough. You're here. You've made the trip. Just do it. And so what they do is they only give you a small dose.
Mm.
It's not about you hallucinating and it's not about taking it to the nth degree. They give you a small dose that opens you right up. And then they do timeline therapy where it takes you back to your very first memory and they break you down bit by bit by bit through your childhood to your beliefs through to, you know, why you're here or why do you think you're here. And that was really interesting.
You're fully awake though, right?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
You're not, and this is what I was worried about.
Yeah.
I'm like, am I going to be
pass out or something?
Seeing
or
unicorns and flying in the cloud, right? Yeah. But it wasn't, that's not the reason they did the psychotherapy.
Yeah.
That's not what psychotherapy is about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about being there for the person that's going through it rather than, here, go on a trip and we'll just be there to make sure you don't fall A over T, you know? So I went through that and it was really interesting in my specific circumstance where every answer I would give without me knowing was calculated and was like almost nigh on, like nothing wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
Like it was just like calculated.
What do you mean by
did you have an awareness?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So you were still filtering what you were answering.
Still without me even knowing, right?
Okay.
And it was interesting. So the four people that were in front of me, they would hold space for a specific part of my brain. And I'll explain what that means. So in your brain, you've got like, let's call it four quarters. But you've got the logical side, the logical processing side. You have the reflective, the subconscious and the emotional side, right? And so each person, which is would be there holding space and thinking about what version of me is talking. And so I was like, this is pretty cool.
Oh, so was it the logical, the subconscious, the emotional?
So when I would talk, instinctively my eyes would dart left to logical. And then I would speak to whoever was speaking to me. And I didn't know this.
But they obviously
They all saw it.
Wow.
And then they told me. And I was like, I swear I'm just looking at you and maybe a little bit to the right.
Okay.
And they said, no. Every time you talk, your eyes dart left. You need to get approval. You need to think.
Wow.
And you need to respond.
So do they want you to respond from the emotional side of the brain?
No, they're just making me aware that I am so geared to
logical. Yeah.
That I don't feel and talk into
what I feel.
Rather than what I'm feeling.
That's incredible.
And I was like, huh, okay.
So you disassociated from your feelings in a sense, like that kind of the brain switched off.
Yeah. All that, yeah. And I guess, you know, when you're dealing with people, especially that have a very high spiritual, let's say, connection or energy, they always talk about connecting your head to your heart.
Like
you need to vibrate. You know, we're vibrating every time we talk. The energy we give out, it's not woo-woo shit. It's genuine. Like, you know, so I'm like, okay. And so one bit opened me up and I've always been afraid to talk about this, but I'll talk about it here. So there was a bit in the psychotherapy where they talked about masculine and feminine energy, right? Now, I thought, oh God, here we go, masculine and feminine. Like, and I'm a novice. I've not really done much work into this. But it was literally like the way I describe it is when they spoke about feminine energy, it was like a white light sort of thing went straight into my heart and like I fully opened up. And I'm like, I became really like, I felt soft.
Yep.
And I never felt soft. I'm like, am I gay? Like I had no, like this
you
was so soft.
You never felt that feeling before?
I've never felt that. And I was like questioning my sexuality. I was like, is this even fucking real?
Yeah.
Like, am I like, what the hell is this softness? And that was really interesting. So I ended up coming home even more fucking confused, to be honest with you, at the start, right?
Yeah.
Because I had opened up Pandora's box.
Yeah.
And I'd opened up a part of me that hadn't been opened up.
Welcome back to Chemist Warehouse Picks of the Week.
I'm excited for this pick because I feel like this is a product that is it's kind of a multi-purpose product, and I'll tell you why soon. But what do we have?
Well, I've been dreaming of a product like this, so I'm happy it's your pick of the week. But it is Illuminant's Revlon Gel Serum Blush. So you might have seen on TikTok all those people that are using serums to create the blush effect when they do their makeup.
I haven't seen that, but that's kind of cool. So this one is it just comes in a little tube like this. But what I love, it's a gel.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the blushes that I use are like a powder or a cream. And I don't know, I'm kind of a little bit sick of that texture. So I feel like this gel is the perfect little product. And there's a few colors we have. I think I'm going to use this red one, which I love.
Because it's a gel, it's hydrating as well.
Yeah. So it's super hydrating for the skin. And it also like plumps as well, which I feel like we love that when you're putting it on your high cheekbones. But what I was going to say about multi-purpose, now I feel like I would use this on my lips as well. So you could do cheeks, lips, and even some people I see like use on their eyelids. It's not advertised for that, but I feel like that's what I would do. But I love having a blush.
For all those people, how would you use it? I'm guessing, Tal, you're the makeup gal, just a few dabs and then blend it in and up.
Yes, and I've also got a little trick with a blush, especially this one because it's red. I just pop it on my high cheekbones, and because it's a gel, you can just use your fingers. You don't need a brush. Just up here, anyone that's listening to the podcast, you'll have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm tapping my high cheekbones.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just put a little dab on the tip of your nose as well. And apparently it's supposed to create like a kind of sun-kissed look, and it's really cute. So that's how I put it on.
Cute. I can't wait to try this product.
Yeah. So this one's from Chemist Warehouse. It is the Revlon Illuminous Gel Serum. Super hydrating, and I love this product.
How was it like after that? Coming back and interacting in your world that was logical and all that, and then you'll come back and you're like, shit, I've been opened up. Did you kind of become reclusive because
I guess,
trying to figure out who you were now?
That's right. So I went with the intention of going, I'm going to do these psychedelics and I'm going to fix my headaches.
Yeah.
Mm. 1 + 1. All right, sweet. I'll do that. But instead, I opened up a box and then I'm like, oh, right, well, there's a bit of work to do on myself, uh-huh. right? And so then this turned into partly self-development
yeah.
mm-hmm. and partly like therapy to like heal a headache.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where things get a little bit interesting because I'm like, well, my headaches can still come on, but now I'm left with questions around the way that I process things. So I try to open up to my parents, talk about things in my culture. Growing up, there was like, we never spoke about girls. We'd only be talking, like we wouldn't even talk about dating people of our own culture. Like there was like, all those things were like big barriers and big blocks. Money was we didn't have an abundance mindset about mm-hmm. that. So there's a lot of things that I think there'll be people that resonate to those things,
yeah.
especially from like ethnic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's something that everyone's got their thing.
Mm.
For me, it was this.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyways, I was back home and it's about 6 months down the track and I was going through another bout of episodes of headaches, right? I'm thinking, oh God, okay, what am I doing here? And I had the oxygen tank in my room and at this stage it was during COVID, so I'm literally like at home with the folks. I just had a big Europe trip.
Yeah.
Come back, you know, and I'm like, all right, we'll look for somewhere to move out to, and then everything happened in Melbourne. It was bizarre. But anyways, there was a certain point in time where I had an oxygen tank in my room and I was going through the headaches and I'm sucking in, I'm breathing in
yeah.
oxygen. Like I'm like, this needs to go. And I remember my mum walking in and seeing me.
Yeah.
And now for those that are mothers, they understand that such protective instincts, mm-hmm. right? And for boys, especially in my case, like you want to protect your mum,
yeah.
right? From seeing anything happen to you.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
You know, you don't want to show any pain, right?
Yeah.
But when you're in so much pain, it's hard not to show. And she's come in, opened the door, happy, whatever. And then she's seen me with like an oxygen mask on, like looking morbid.
They still don't know at this point that you're dealing with cluster headaches.
No, they know I'm dealing with it, but they don't know
the extent of it.
The extent of it. I think that's the point.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, I would have just gone, go to the hospital.
Yeah.
But and she like her whole face like uh-huh. just dropped and changed. Like, mm-hmm. you know, imagine having you know, your little mm-hmm. one you've seen grow up, raise up. And I never look at her like this as a guy, but you're like, you see your child raised up, you do everything you can, and mm-hmm. then you see them pain. Suffer yeah. in pain. And her face just like dropped, it changed. I saw her eyes change, I saw her like physicality change. And she was literally like borderline crying, like as soon as she, and all within a second.
Yeah.
It all happens with so quickly, right? And I'm sure people have seen that with their own parents.
Yeah.
And have seen them go from, you know, charismatic, strong, beautiful, no problems to like devastated. Mm-hmm. And that rocks you. And it rocked me. And at that point in time, I actually got that surge of energy, that motivation, that drive, right? And so I was so pissed off that I couldn't do anything about it. And then so I go back to my mate and I'm like, right, buddy, like what else is there to do? Like how much deeper down the rabbit hole can I go to get to trying to resolve these headaches? Because I'm like I've got the injections now, but I've only got a dozen of them. And if you're getting two a day for 30 to 60 days, that's sweet FA. And then I've got an oxygen tank, but it means if I'm out at work, I don't have to run home, suck on oxygen for half an hour to 40 minutes and then go back to work absolutely spent. So I did another plane trip, and I won't talk about what psychedelics I've taken because I don't want this to be around around that. I want it just to be around, you know, the experience behind it, because, you know, I think that this type of medicine is wonderful if it's done with a bit of respect for it and if it's done under the right guise. And I think there's a lot of people, like when you talk about in LA, that will probably abuse it and want to seem spiritual, so to speak, rather than doing it for like a deep intrinsic work, which I think is very, very different to, what's currently being perceived out
trending,
there.
Like
trending, so to speak. And so I went and I did a ceremony with 15 other guys. So it was just men. And we sat down in this room. It was pitch black, and they were going to give us a cup of this liquid to drink. And this liquid tasted like it was like gross. Yuck.
Yeah.
You know, it was
picturing like dirty water.
Dirty water, bark, pepper, butter.
Gross.
Mixed up.
Yeah.
Like,
knock it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just like close your eyes and just drink it, right? But it was very interesting. This is quite a commonly known psychedelic, and it was something that the men that were there, I was the youngest guy.
Wow.
And that was so surprising, because I'm talking like the people that I met were like CEOs of companies, COOs, like high-level executives, fathers, like you name it. And I'm like, I expected there to be like…
Hippies.
Mm. And these guys are definitely not that.
Wow.
Why do you think there's such a movement with people of that level of success doing things like this?
Probably Burning Man.
Okay.
Honestly, yeah. I reckon the amount of like
people… It's glorified going to Burning Man and experiencing…
Well, I think there's that story of like Google COO or some high level from Google going there and then hiring someone there and… All this type of stuff. In America, it's definitely spoken about a lot more, right? In Canada. But I think that's brought to light a lot of it as well, and a lot of what you would deem in today's society successful people from at least a financial and a stability standpoint from wherever they may situate themselves, that they were going there and that they were doing psychedelics and they were opening themselves up. Now, that's not to say that they use psychedelics to get to that point, but they had then opened themselves up once they had got to that point. And that was really interesting. And I reckon that sort of stuff trended around here in sort of our neck of the woods. But there are also, you know, older men that probably know about this, that, you know, back in their day in the 80s when this was a little bit more of a thing, probably had a crack, you know, before it was ruled out.
Yeah, right.
And they're gone, well, now there's a bit of a resurgence back into it. Maybe we'll open ourselves up back to it again. But in a different way. So that was interesting. And so, you know, I guess I'm there and I have a cup of this liquid and you have these like cute little journey chairs. So they're like little beds on the floor that have the backrest up.
Oh yeah, cute.
It was kind of nice.
Yeah.
So I'm like snuggled into that. I'm like, rightio, what's going to happen here? You know, see the stuff, like, you know, am I going to see stuff or whatever? I don't know what's going to happen. And I lie back down and you start hearing other men sort of move around or start making weird noises or start like quote unquote journeying, like seeing stuff, and some giggle, some cry, and nothing has happened to me. Like zero, like nothing. Like,
really?
And I'm thinking, maybe I got the wrong dose here. So I put my hand up.
Yeah.
And because it's dark, it's hard to see, but there's facilitators walking around to look after you. And he's like, what's up? I'm like, I think I need another one, yeah. And he's like, okay, you're brave.
Did he ask you why?
Yeah, well, I was pretty conscious and I was talking clearly. Okay. So he was like, all right, this bro hasn't gone deep yet. And so I had another bowl. And about half an hour in, absolutely nothing has happened as well.
What?
So I've had twice the dose of every other bloke. Nothing's happened. And I'm thinking, oh God, here we go. Like, what are the chances, right? You have a little intermission and everyone starts to come out of their journey. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours in and the facilitator will go, you know, how's everyone doing? Check up. Like it's very professional, really well done. It's not like how people might envisage it. And I remember going up to him because you do another dose and I'm like, nothing's happened. It's like, no worries, brother. I'll make sure you got a bit extra. I did that and nothing happened again. I did another one, nothing happened again. So I had double the amount of every single person, nothing happened, zero. And I'm thinking, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like,
were you resisting it?
Well, do you know what I said to myself? Yeah. I said, all right, I said to myself, take me, I don't care. Like, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm over this. Like, this has been too long. Like, whatever the hell this is meant to do to your body, whatever the outcome is, I don't care anymore. Please just do whatever you have to do. To stop these headaches, yeah, whatever it takes. And nothing happened. And then they have an intermission one last time. And then they give you this thing to like, it's like a snuff that you inhale through your nose to like meditate you, right? It's not cocaine, just in case there's anyone that's listening. It's not white powder, relax. And you do it and…
How does it meditate you? Just take you to…
Yeah, it's like what they use. I think they talk about a Netflix documentary, but it effectively creates like a stillness in your body and an energy within your body. It's like comes from a specific tobacco leaf in the Amazon.
Wow!
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It quieted me down, and then I had another drink, and my guts are cooked. They're so and then I started to purge as a result of it. Now. In the spiritual community, they'd be like, you're releasing energy. This is great, you know. And I'm thinking, I think I've just got a bad reaction to the bark and butter more than anything else. Yeah. So after that whole time, you know, make a big effort to go there to get stuff done. Absolutely nothing happened. Zero. And I'm thinking, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, and I think that speaks to maybe the amount of resistance I had built up in my body over time.
Yeah.
You know, the hardness that is not necessarily a good thing, I don't advocate, but the hardness that I had to deal with the headaches and everything stiffened me right up to the point where I couldn't
let go,
be open, you know, relax the shoulders a bit. So then I ended up doing one more journey and that ended up cracking me open pretty good.
And when it cracks you open, what happens?
Did they say why you didn't crack open that one time?
No, because it's interesting. It's like they don't have the answers for you. You have the answers for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's part of the experience is that you have to experience that yourself.
Yeah.
Right? They're sort of there to hold space and provide opportunity for you to navigate yourself. And they're there to make sure that you don't go out of the lanes, you know, so that you're okay and that – they talk about, you know, making sure that you have, after going through something like that, time to speak to the facilitators to make sure that you're okay, that you've navigated through that, that what have you taken from that so that you're not just left out in your own devices going, how do I navigate what the fuck's just happened, you know. But the third time was really interesting.
Sorry, before you go into the third time, when you went home after that and you were like, fuck, nothing happened, what was the step that got you to go the third time?
Sure. So
good question.
Yeah, like what? Because if I would have been like, I'm a failure, I'm done.
I would have given up.
Yeah, I would have given up.
Yeah, I was pretty close to.
Yeah.
So I had a fair bit happen in a short period of time.
Okay.
I had to move one of my clinics for work really quickly, and everyone knows what moving's like.
Yep.
I had to move house. I had to deal with like some family situations mm-hmm. that were occurring, and I was doing a lot of work around finances and mm-hmm. all that type of stuff. Dad was really ill. He got back-to-back heart attack, stroke.
Oh, shit, I'm sorry.
It's all right. He's all good now. Okay, cool. But, well, he's getting there. Yeah. He's gone through a massive roller coaster. But at that time, and then I did CPR in the same week on a guy my dad's age that didn't make it.
Fuck, okay.
Right? So a lot of shit happened.
Yeah.
I'm like, fucking book me for this trip, yeah? I'm like, yeah. I need to go. I'm like, too much stuff is going on. Mm. And also I have the curiosity bug now of mm-hmm. going, well, what am I holding in? Like, what's up? You know, because this is ridiculous. Mm. So I made one final plane trip, and this was using a psychedelic that is like ridiculously rare to find. And it is not to be treated lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shitting myself. Like I am, like I read up on it a little bit and I looked into it and I'm like, oh God, this could be it for me, right? So I took a flight and I get to there's a beautiful campsite where uh-huh. I go to. And I ended up, you know, getting to the airport, taking the taxi there or whatever it was, and then getting a lift from one place to the next place to, you know, find this location. And I get there and I'm early, and it's pretty rare for me to be early, but I was like super early, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's just times with the flight and everything. And the facilitators for this psychedelic were taking two men through the exact same experience I was about to go through. So I got to witness someone else go through it before I got to go through it. Oh, I'm like, well, this is cool.
Yeah.
Cool, or you're going to pack your bags and not do it?
Well, wait, could see what happens.
Either be.
See what happens. Yeah. So I roll up and it's pretty warm. There's like beautiful picturesque mountains, nice lake, cabins, beautiful scenery, uh-huh. forestry. Like it's quite a beautiful place, right? Mm. And so I'm walking in there and there's a big tent in the middle of this forestry, and in that tent there were two gentlemen sitting down. And to give an idea of what happens when you do this psychedelic, so you inhale some fumes, right? Uh-huh. And when you inhale these fumes, you have to inhale it for a long period of time. So you're like sucking it in, and then you hold it in yourself, and then you breathe it out.
Okay.
Okay, so I saw these two gentlemen that were about to do this. And I said, hey to the facilitator, how you doing? Hey, brother, how are you? I'm like, yeah, good, good, good. And I ended up standing pretty much close to one participant and away from another participant. And the facilitator said, would you like to help out with this ceremony? Would you like to hold space? And I'm thinking, what the fuck's hold space mean? Like, what does that mean? Yeah. Like, you know, like, all right, whatever, yeah? And so to hold space, all I needed to do, what I learned was that's sort of, you know, observing without judgment, just uh-huh. being there spiritually, energetically, all those type of things. And so I got a box of tissues in case someone threw up or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting and I was looking at these two guys. And on my left, I had this guy and he was like, you know, does anyone have like a cheeky, chubby sort of white Caucasian friend that's like always smiling and yes. like, you know, eyes light up yeah. all the time? That was this guy, right? Okay. He was like vibrant, energetic. He looked cheeky, like it was all good. And he's sitting down and he's in his late 40s, no doubt about it. And then the other guy is also in his late 40s, but his facial features are ridiculously different. They are like someone who is like not eaten for a long period of time, super sharp, that his eyes are like piercing like a cat's eyes, like his jaw is, everything's gaunt, vascular, and he looks at you like he's like a man possessed,
oh
yeah?
Oh God.
So this is the guy I'm standing next to.
Yeah, wow.
Right? And I'm thinking, you know, do you want to shuffle left a bit, Steve, just to get to the other guy, right? But they ended up doing it. And in that moment, I had seen two of the most polar opposite reactions I've ever seen. Now, psychedelics obviously have the capacity to create hallucinations.
Uh-huh.
So the guy on my left was hallucinating and he's seeing shit in 4D, yeah? He's just like, everything's greener, brighter, bluer. You know, he's ecstatic. His whole emotional body has just bursted out into pure bliss, pure joy. The guy I was next to literally looked like he was going through an exorcism.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
Complete pole. And this is the thing, right? It's like it brings out in you what you have in you, right? And so if your intention is one thing and you are holding on to something deep or dark or whatever it is, it's going to find it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it's not one plus one anymore. It's like, and this is what I was struggling with. It's
and
not
that
one
shit
plus one.
That's been there for a long time that people are uncovering.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So he's like his whole hands, elbows, shoulders, jaw, everything is like crunching in, right? And we know that because when you're in protection mode, we all curl up.
Oh.
Don't we? Like you're hungover and you need Uber Eats. You want to crawl into a little circle, right? Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. If you're in pain, what do? You grip your leg, you go tight. So whenever you are in amount of stress or pain, you tend to move in, almost like when you're a baby in that position, uh-huh. like this position, because you're always fighting for something. Uh-huh. And so he literally bursts out, screams, like I can't explain how loud he screamed. And I'm there just holding space, looking at him, going, oh my God, is this going to be me?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
He ended up doing this one more time, but he said, I want to go out now into the absolute wilderness and I want to do it with no one around besides you, you and you.
How long does this trip last for?
Probably 10, 15.
Oh, that's it. Wow. So yeah. The other one was an hour and a half and this is like a quicker one.
This is a quicker one.
Ah.
And or for the men that actually experienced it, it was probably a lot longer.
Yeah.
Right? But for this one, this is like a punch in the face. And so I go into the forestry with him and with the two facilitators that are professionals that have done this plenty of times. And he's like, oh, okay. Let's go, like let it all out. And I'm like, how much more can this guy let out? Mm. I have just witnessed someone yell to the top of their lungs. And to my surprise, you can let more out apparently.
Wow.
Yeah, and he had the most violently crazy outburst scream thing you could comprehend ever. Like imagine if you… Talik, you could scream at the top of your lungs when you're pissed off, right?
Yeah.
Like double it.
Wow.
Because you're not in control as much, right? So it is everything comes out.
Yeah.
And so he's on the floor. It's like someone's – like you ever seen an epileptic fit? Like someone's convulsing, moving, gripping, holding, screaming. It was all happening. And so after that I was pretty rocked.
Yeah.
Understandably. And at this point now the other crew that are coming in to do the workshop are just starting to filter in, right? And so I go there now to the main group, having witnessed everything, thinking, oh my God, these 20 people that are here have got no fucking idea what they're in for, yeah? And so then it's my turn to go. And so we do two of these attempts on day one. And then we have a break overnight and then we do two again the next day.
Okay.
And then, yeah, then it starts.
Then it starts? Like what happens? Do you see pictures? Do you…
So the key that they explain is that you need to have an intention behind when you go in, right?
Yeah.
And so the first two times my intention was to just trust and to be open, okay, just because I knew that whatever was going to happen is what's going to happen. And I still remember standing there in front of the facilitator, like literally shivering, like my whole body is shivering because you're so scared. Like you are, like I'm freaking out. Like, you know, once again, and every single journey I've done, I've always been freaking out because you don't know you're about to lose control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do this thing, and then I ended up collapsing on the ground, and I just ended up having reverberations in my throat. Like it was like, for those that are familiar with the chakras, they've got one right up here, which talks about speaking your truth. They've got the root chakra, they've got your crown chakra, they've got all these chakras, right? And I've got not much understanding of it, but I started to put that all together because that's what they talk about. And so the first time was that. The second time the same thing happened, except I'll try to stand up, inhale, and try to stand myself up and hold myself up. and my legs just gave under way.
Oh, wow.
And so the guys would lay me down and I was limp. I was like, what the hell is going on? And you are mildly conscious at this stage. And once again, reverberations in my throat, right? It was really interesting. So I had gone through a hard, very hard period in my life, especially with my old man not being able to save someone doing CPR, all this stuff. And I swear to you, so I'm lying on my back. I've gone through two of these things and nothing's happened. And then I'm looking out into the sky and there's literally like a cloud coming at me.
Mm.
And I'm like, am I tripping balls here? What's going on? And it was like a big Bowser looking angry. Like I'm picturing, I'm like, am I tripping here? What's going on? And I started just smiling and laughing because I'm like, of course this is happening to me. But what was super interesting was over the duration of me looking at this big cloud, it would eventually pass over 5-10 minutes. And I'm like, huh, can I take something away from that? I'm like, shit happens and it passes.
Yeah.
It does pass.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, go to bed, wake up, go again. And so I did. And then the third time I did it, I had an amazing experience.
Oh, wow.
An amazing experience. I'm standing there, I'm nervous, I inhale, and then the facilitator goes portrait mode, like off your camera. Do you know when you like zoom in and then everything else goes through? He literally goes portrait mode and I can see him in every single shape, way, shape or form. I zoom out, look at the trees, the beautiful forestry. That is like picturesque green. I look at the river and it is the brightest blue you'll ever see and everything is like heightened. Nature is beautiful, like it's wild. And there was a massive opening for me. And I was seeing some of the other guests and they were looking at me smiling because they knew that they've experienced the same thing.
Oh, cute.
It was really beautiful, right? But it hadn't gotten down to my headaches. It was just a nice trip, let's call it, right? And so as I spoke about earlier in the podcast, one of the things that they talk about is connecting head to heart, being open, right? So my final intention was like, I need to connect my head to my heart. I need to be open. And I need to completely let go, right? And I stand there. I walk in front of the facilitator. This is the final attempt. I've done everything up until this point. I'm just ready to like just whatever comes, right? And so I inhale, I stand, I see the visuals. And then I have like a surge, like an eruption come through my body. And then I just yell out at the top of my lungs, like literally the guy that was going through the super hard time, but I yell out, who gives a fuck? Like yelled it out so loud. Like I yelled it out. I screamed it out. I didn't yell it out. And I screamed it out 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 like 100 times. Like not just once or twice. Like I yelled it out 100 times. Who gives a fuck? You might have to put censorship on this, but like whatever. Yeah. I was literally like yelling it out, screaming it out. And people are laughing. They're clapping. They're well done. Like it was such a big thing for me, right? Because once I go through this experience, I realize how much I cared about what the people that in my life cared about me as well, but their opinions and their views.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a lot. But it gave me a really good clarity and understanding of maybe why this thing came about in the first place. And it's interesting, like, you know, I speak to my family about it now and my brother about it now. He's like, no shit, if you would have told me that you had had that much, like, feeling of responsibility and feeling of like stress growing up, that may cause some level of effect in your body.
Of course.
Right? But I just didn't know the extent of the effect is so severe.
Mm.
How can something like that create something so severe? And so that was super interesting. And so now it's interesting. I've learned not to have an attachment to the cluster headaches. Like I'm not trying to say that this will cure me for the rest of my life. But I'm just trying to say that I have a greater understanding of it now. And like, bless my lucky stars, I've been good.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Wow.
I have been good. But if it does happen, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like it's not about that anymore. It's about me. I feel super comfortable now understanding why it's occurred. And for a lot of people, understanding why is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Simon Sinek always says, starts with why, right?
Mm.
So understanding why is super important. And then for me now, it's like, cool. All right, I've got some tools to navigate it. I understand why. And then from there, my journey was actually literally on the day of it. I said, I'm going to do a podcast. I don't know what about, but it's going to be talking about not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
And what that means to me is saying what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I will get heaps of judgment for it. I know that, but that's kind of the point is trying to navigate that, learn about myself, learn how I react to that, and then doing my best to move through it and not hold on to something that's always gripped me growing up.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
And thank you so much for being so open and like vulnerable and telling your experience. Now, do you have any other questions in regards to that?
Not in terms of the psychedelics, but I know Steve runs men's circles.
That's what I was going to say,
Has that head and heart and openness helped you connect to other men? And why do you run men's circles?
Good question.
Yeah. So I think once that experience had happened for me, I learned to be more open to listening, active listening, and realizing that what I would have deemed for some blokes as like toughen up, you don't have context of what's happened prior.
Yeah, right.
Or, you know, so it's then trying to learn about judgment and discernment and understanding the difference and still understanding that I am definitely not perfect and I will still judge people and just, you know, and that happens. But now it's like, let's work together on being able to ride that wave and being open to discuss certain things that you feel are holding you back that maybe you wouldn't share with your close mates, similar to me, because you felt vulnerable or weak or, you know, you didn't want to discuss that. Whereas if you're in a group or a community that can do that, then that can be the catalyst to start those conversations. And if you don't, once again, for a lot of men, especially for men over the age of 30, they don't have the same network of mates stereotypically as most women do to talk to about stuff.
That's true. Women tend to have much more of an emotional connection, I feel.
The older you get, true.
Yeah.
And I don't, well, I'm not a guy. Presume guys don't have that.
But I think also women have so much stuff happen to their body at a young age.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You have so much stuff happen. You go through so much at an early age of life that you almost need to speak about it, right? Early. Guys do not.
Yeah.
Right? We're very, very, very differently wired.
Yeah.
So we are generally, and I always speak generally, but like we are generally more along the lines of, if you're sports or if you're at work or if you're studying, it's just like, just get the stuff done.
Yeah.
You replenish the same ways, whereas you guys are like, you're cyclical. You have to work on a cycle, so it's different. And you have to talk about that with people. And I think that's very, very different for men and women growing up. So then men reach a stage in their life where they haven't really needed it, but stuff has happened or things that have, you know, occurred in their life and they go, well, I've never needed to navigate through that before. And so that's where I think that type of men's work is really important. And so there's a great friend of mine, Cam, who founded it and has brought me into it. And he's one of the best guys. He's a qualified trauma coach and he's worked a lot with people in that field. And because of what I was doing and what I went through, he's like, help me facilitate it so that we can start to encourage these conversations between men. So that's what I've done that for.
I love that. I've got a question before we wrap up. How have your friends been? How have they reacted to that men's circle?
Yeah, really good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, really good. I think, and this is the thing, it's like, it's not my friends necessarily that are in the men's circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's other men that are in the men's circle.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's interesting, my current housemate never knew, and he's one of my closest mates, never knew about my headaches up until I had the oxygen cylinder in my room, right? So I think one of those things is, you know, our conversations have got deeper, more open because I guess of what I am trying to do in that space now. And, you know, the same thing with the podcast that I'm doing is very, very similar. Squeezing the Plums is a podcast and it's about creating uncomfortable conversations or topics of conversations with men around what they've gone through in their life and how they've navigated it. Because there are a bunch of men that don't want to talk about things, but are happy to listen to other men talking about things so that they can start their journey.
That's true. Very true.
So that's the space where I think blokes may not want to talk. They may not want to enter a men's circle. But if a bloke talks about, like I've had a guest that's spoken about losing his bub at 9 days and then how 70% of marriages fail within the first year after that.
It's crazy.
Right? And it's like, who the fuck talks about that?
No. Yeah.
So that's where I think there's going to be heaps of different topics of conversations, but hopefully it gives an avenue for men to just listen,
yeah.
no judgment, and then maybe navigate some and opening up some conversation.
Absolutely.
I think that's amazing.
I think I was just thinking there because we had Sarah's brother on yesterday talking about how he's on this sober journey. I've loved how we've had two males 2 days in a row opening up, being vulnerable.
I was saying that to Steve the other week as well. I really appreciate guys like this and tapping into the more emotional side. And
agree.
I think it's beautiful.
It's a tough one to navigate.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, and there are guys that will try to navigate it. And I think.
Does it clash with your masculinity?
100%.
Yeah.
But you still need it.
Yeah.
You still need it. You still need to have that bit of dog in you. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's about losing that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's about understanding that it's not healthy to be too one way or the other.
Yeah.
And that there are times and places where we are learning, especially men are learning, that the old school guy that is super masculine is learning how to open up a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's also the other end of the scale. Where you're like some guy, like I hear women talk about it all the time. I wish a guy could have a little bit more purpose and direction.
Mm. Absolutely.
It's like, fucking make a date at 7 o'clock on a Thursday night. Don't make me do it. Mm. You know, and there's a little bit of that too. And so it's a really interesting space that I think men are navigating. I'm personally navigating it. Don't have all the answers, but I think the conversations are opening up. I think it's really cool.
I think what you're doing is amazing.
And just for anyone that's listening, what's the podcast called again?
It's called Squeezing the Plums.
Okay, perfect. And you've got an Instagram and stuff like that. We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. But if anyone, any of our guy friends listening.
Yeah, it's I Am Steve Singh and then all the links to the podcast in that Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. I loved hearing that story.
Thanks, Tali. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, girls.
It's us again. We're back.
It's Tali and Sarah and if you don't know, we have an activewear brand called Tully Lou.
And we have Australia's favourite leggings, but not only do we have leggings, we've got hoodies, we've got outerwear.
We've got everything that you may need for an active lifestyle. So we want to give you guys an offer if you've never shopped at Tully Lou or if you've shopped at Tully Lou.
And you just want $15 off your next order.
You need to take this offer.
And it's TL Cherry, all caps, all one word. And pop that in at checkout and you will get $15 off.
So head to our website. It's www.tallyloo.com or head to our Instagram, stalk our page, use the code and let's get you all in some TL.
And welcome to the family.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.